Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Swinging a high drive into center field, hits at the wall, it is gone! Cassis does it again!
Again!
It's gone! It's into the bullpen! This game is tied! This game is tied!
And he swings and rips one to center field. It's high, it's deep, it's back, it's gone! Sale winds, he fires. Swing and a miss, strike three, it's over! The Red Sox have won the World Championship!
Welcome back to Play Tessy. It is episode 151. If you're listening on Drop Date, it's November 14th. This is the official Red Sox podcast of WEI. Before we get going, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Check out the WEI YouTube channel. We got a Play Tessy playlist there. You can find us on all the socials as well at Play Tessy. I'm here with Sammy and I'm here with Pat, but it's time to turn that frown upside down because we are joined by MLB.com's very own Ian Brown, covering the Red Sox since 2002, which I don't mean to age you, but I believe that's there's only one of us that remembers the 2002 Red Sox season. And that's Sammy.
Yeah, well, as we reminisced about with Derek Lowe the other night, Chris Cotillo was there as a six-year-old fan, and I was there as a reporter covering Derek Lowe's no-hitter. So that, that made me feel a little old right there.
That was a wild conversation to watch happen. Just like Derek Lowe's no hitter, which has been like, I don't like, it's probably the first, I don't even remember it happening because that's before my mind was like developed enough to know what was going on. But seeing Cotillo was at that game and you covered the game and seeing that picture get taken, wild experience. But the Pedro Gallo was fun.
Yeah, you know, I wouldn't go up to every player about something like that, but Derek Lowe is the loosest guy in the world, and he thought it was hilarious, and he took the picture with us, and credit to him, one of my favorite guys of all time that I've covered.
Yeah, also evidence in the picture, he is ridiculously tall.
He's a tall man, it's true.
But, I mean, everyone listening to this saw Derek Lowe. He was very good in the documentary, reminiscing about the good old days of 04. And when we were talking to Ortiz, he kept talking about the happy days too.
Yeah.
But God, I mean, I know everyone knows it. Everyone who's listening, all the four of us know it. There's a lot of buzz right now that the Red Sox might be trying to get back to, as David Ortiz said, those happy days.
Yeah.
Ian, I got to ask you, are you of the belief as well that the Sox are getting ready to get back to investing now in the now, whether it be using their checkbook or prospect capital?
I think both. And they've got to be, because look, after the full throttle disaster of a year ago, they would not come out and have rhetoric like this again for the second straight year if they weren't actually going to follow through on it this time. So I'm really no idea what happened last year with that whole thing. Nobody does. It remains a big mystery how they were full throttle and trying to sign Yamamoto 1 minute and then just completely going bargain basement and trading Chris Sale and paying him for Vaughn Grissom the next. But yeah, no, I really feel like they realized that, like they said, like Alex Cora and Sam Kennedy and Breslow were all pretty consistent with their messaging that the fans deserve this. They've waited 3 years now. Five out of the last six really have not been very good seasons. People talk about the last three, but 19 wasn't a very good year. 20 was a terrible year, obviously the pandemic, so that was just a bad year anyway. 21, I mean, were they even really trying to win that? I mean, they kind of caught lightning in a bottle with that whole thing.
And they got then, bounced, or they almost got bounced on the last day of the year anyway. We wouldn't. Yeah, we could have been talking about six straight years.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about guys like Kike Hernandez, you know, just playing way over his head for them to even get where they got. And then the last 3 years have just been very, I would say from a reporter's perspective, just kind of depressing watching it unfold, because you see these teams that kind of tease you a little bit the first few months of the year. They're in the race. And what they were doing, it seems like they were building teams that could compete for the third wildcard spot, because it's kind of dumbed down now, or it's really not that hard to make the playoffs. But somehow it became harder than ever for the Red Sox to make it, because they didn't make it those 3 years. So I think that they finally realized they were setting their sights too low. And if you set your sights for the third wild card, you're probably not going to get it. Maybe if you set your sights for the division, maybe you'll get a wild card. You know, so it's like they gotta aim a little higher here. They've got to invest a little more now that the organization's at a good point. I mean, credit to both Heim Bloom for, I guess he was there for 4 years, and Breslow for the 1 year, just having the discipline to build this thing up where they're now in position to make trades or free agent signings right now. I think they're in a really good spot. I'm actually ready for my next newsletter about how they should really go get Garrett Crochet and how they're kind of positioned to do that. And yeah, I think there's going to be some fireworks, you know, this offseason. I really do. And I'll be disappointed if there's not. It's more fun to cover a team that's got star players and that's got a buzz to it than kind of what we've seen the last 3 years, which is just, you know, to put it kindly, it's just mediocrity what we've seen the last 3 years.
So, Ian, I want to thank you because you gave me the most beautiful layup possible to ask you about Garrett Crochet. He's been the talk of the town. I think the debate today on Wednesday, November 13th, as we're recording, the debate was, can the Red Sox acquire a guy like Garrett Crochet without including one of the big four prospects? We spoke about this last week, kind of sort of torn on the subject. I wanted to get your take on this one. Can they do it?
I don't think so. And I kind of wrote that, and it'll be coming out soon. But I kind of wrote that this trade is going to need to involve one of those four guys. I don't think the Red Sox will include Roman Anthony. I do think that one of the other three guys could be in play, especially a guy like Marcelo Meyer. Look, the organization, if you look at it, they're loaded with shortstops. They've got a lot of shortstops in the pipeline. They've got Trevor Story for a couple more years. They've got Rafaela who could play short for the time being. So that could be a spot. And his health, you don't want to be with him for another season when he breaks down at the end of the year. He still has value now, right? He's coming off a good year. So he could be a centerpiece of this deal. And then I think you're probably also going to have to add in someone like a Willier Abreu or Tristan Casas, somebody significant. Look, this guy is Crochet. He's one of the best pitchers in the game last year by a lot of metrics. And I look at him, he could be what he could become what Scooble was this year, you know, if he gets a full innings workload. So you're going to have to pay. You know, it's like you have to, I can't remember which former Red Sox GM said it, but you have to identify, you know, what is your price of pain for making this trade? And I think that this is a guy that is worth, you know, trading one of these guys. I'm kind of with them. And Roman Anthony, to me, boy, he just looks like a superstar waiting to happen. I would hate to see him traded. Who knows? Maybe he'll end up being the next Andrew Benintendi instead of a superstar, where Benintendi kind of had a good start but never really became the star that they thought he was going to be. But this guy just he looks out of central casting as just like a building block player. So I would do everything in my power not to trade that guy, to build around him. But I would like to see Garrett Crochet come to the Sox. I think that would bring a lot of excitement. And at least for the next 2 years, cost controllable with arbitration, then a free agent. So maybe work out some kind of extension to keep him around past his free agency years.
So in the same vein, knowing that, because I think it was Jeff Passan today, he was on Talkin' Baseball, and he said that from the Yankees' perspective, a package of Jason Dominguez and Spencer Jones likely isn't enough. So there was Sox people on Twitter freaking out about the price. In your perspective, what do you think is like the smarter, you're the head of baseball ops, the smarter move to invest the money in an established guy like a Corbin Burns or a Max Fried, or to maybe deal from your young surplus of these top prospects for a younger guy who has his prime ahead of him in Crochet?
I look at dealing for Crochet only because then you can reallocate the money for other guys, whether it's a Burns or whether it's a position player, Teoscar Hernandez, somebody like that, you know, these Juan Soto rumors. You know, I think the Red Sox would love to get Juan Soto, but, you know, are they willing to spend $600 million? Is there anything the Red Sox could do that would convince him that Boston is a better landing spot for him than the Yankees or Mets? Something like that. So I think if they can save some money on the pitching, they can use it elsewhere. Don't forget, they also have to rebuild their whole bullpen, right? So you're looking at, Tanner Scott here, and there's other things they have to do. If it was just like the Dodgers in 2020, right, and you needed this one piece to put you over the top, and that piece was Mookie Betts, and then you went out and signed him an extension, you do that. But the Red Sox, I mean, we all know they're not one piece away, right? So that's why I think that you trade for Crochet, much like you trade the prospects for Chris Hill that year. You know, same two teams, Red Sox and White Sox. And then you reallocate your money towards other parts of the team, that right-handed bat, the bullpen, like I said, maybe another starting pitcher. So I just think that's the way to go.
So you brought up Juan Soto, so I'm going to go there.
Yeah.
And I'll give you my little spiel on it, because I still don't – like I still don't think the chances are even – close to likely, like still borderline discussable. But the one thing that does intrigue me is to have a meeting with Juan Soto. Like, they know at least generally where the price is going to be. It's obvious the starting point is at least $500 million, and it's probably going to go over 600. So the fact that they're entertaining the meeting, to me, even if they don't get him, intrigues me down the road. If there was someone who, and I know Soto's splits are equal either way, but if there was someone out there who hit from the right-hand side was also super young and was an absolute beast and maybe plays for the Toronto Blue Jays, I don't know, comes available or is a free agent in a year, maybe this is a sign that down the road a little bit they could spend money. That's where my head goes with the Juan Soto stuff. Do you think there's more to be talked about here? Like, are the chances real that Juan Soto could actually come to Boston? And if not, how should fans interpret it?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's real that the Red Sox are going to get themselves into these sweepstakes, make their best offer. But I just don't see – I don't see it adding up on both sides. And I don't see – let's face it, Soto looks at the Red Sox as a team that didn't make the playoffs the last 3 years. This guy just went to the World Series. You know, he wants that taste again. And he's probably going to get that with either the Yankees or a Mets team that was, went to game six of the NLCS this past year. But yeah, I there's nothing to lose by being in this game. It's the same game they were in last year with Yamamoto, where they probably knew going in that they weren't going to be the team that was going to come away with him. But they valued him just like they value Soto. And if they do have to dig deep into their pockets, they're willing to do it. So why not give it a shot? But, you know, I think that's a great point about Guerrero. I would love to see him in Boston. I think a lot of people would. I mean, talk about a guy who could just, you know, tear the wall down.
That'd be a blast.
You know, it would be a blast. But Soto is the one guy where you're like, the Red Sox are too left-handed. He can't add another left-handed. But he's the one guy where I'm like, you know what? You cannot say that. This guy is a transcendent hitter. He's a transformational player. He's a franchise hitter. And if you can get him, you don't care what side he hits from, then you adapt. And then you get rid of Acasas, you get rid of Abreu, you even it out, that whole right-left balance. You go out and get somebody else. But, if you can get this guy, give it a shot. You know, I think the Red Sox are a long shot to get him, but I like the fact that they're going for it. And I think that, again, signals that they're willing to go places this offseason that they haven't been in other places. And you get the feeling that the Red Sox are going to come away with a couple of impact players this winter that are really going to have people talking about the Red Sox again.
What's your estimate on the cost of Juan Soto? We saw Ohtani go for $700 million.
Yeah, and that was all deferred, right? Like contract being bogus.
Weird contract. But what do you think Soto's going to go for? So it's got to be something crazy. Not quite that, but something nuts.
I keep seeing around $600 million, something like that. He's 26, right? Yeah. So that's the one thing you have. I mean, 26 is crazy. Like, what's Devers, 28 now? So he's 2 years younger than Devers, which is crazy. And just to have these two guys, you have these two guys together in the lineup, ideally separated by a righty in between them. I mean, God, the Red Sox just become an offense that people are talking about. If they have Juan Soto, name your right-handed hitter here, and then Juan Soto, that would just be such a combo. It'd be like back to the days of David and Manny, which I was lucky to have a front row seat for that one from 2003 till about the middle of 2008 when Manny got traded. And that was just so much fun to watch. You love to see combos like that. Even Judge and Soto last year, that was a lot of fun for any baseball follower to just see the kind of impact those two guys could have.
I didn't enjoy that, but you guys, no.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
So obviously the Soto to the Red Sox situation, very, very unlikely, kind of a pipe dream situation. But there's a lot of free agent pitching on the market that is a lot more likely to end up in Boston. Burns, Fried, Snell, I could go on. Any of those guys pique your interest? Anyone in particular stand out as a target that you think the Red Sox will pursue or should pursue?
Yeah, look, the name I keep coming back to is Burns. Like every time I think about this, he's the guy that I think of if they're going to sign a free agent. Because look, he pitched in the American League East last year, right, for the Orioles. He proved that he can pitch in the division. And this is always a big issue when you're going out and getting a pitcher. You know, Ortiz said something like that the other night where you got to watch out for these guys who are just good at the National League. They come over to the American League. It's not always the same thing. This guy, to me, was battle-tested last year in the AL East, and he just, like, looks like that, like, kind of classic bulldog. You know, I have to admit, I haven't seen Fried. I haven't seen him a whole lot. I haven't seen him pitch a whole lot. Snell, you kind of know what you got. You know, he's a five- or six-inning pitcher. Is he really that just kind of, like, Blake Snell's pitching and the other team is like, oh boy, we're facing Blake Snell. Like, I don't know about you guys, but I don't look at him like that. Where I do look at, Corbin Burns like that. I'm like, okay, this guy is a prototypical power pitcher. And that's the kind of guy I would want fronting my rotation. I think he would thrive in Boston.
So I was doing a deep dive myself into Corbin Burns today. Cause I feel like the last couple days, specifically, I'd seen him more connected to the Red Sox than I'd seen in the past. And your colleague Mark Feinsand in his Reddit AMA yesterday said as such. So I was doing a little bit of digging, and everyone points at the strikeout rate, but every other number, including velocity was actually up this year on his sinker. Everything else, like walks are down, home runs stay level, everything else looks good. And he's younger than Fried and Burns. Or Fried and Snell. The only thing, though, is he's a right-handed pitcher.
And I would like, that's why I love Crochet so much. That's why.
Exactly. So what I was going to ask is, do you think that if they went after Burns, maybe there'd be a path to do both?
Ooh. Yeah, that's the thing. That's what I was saying before. That's what I was saying before is that, Crochet is not cost prohibitive, at least for the next couple of years. You're just paying him his controlled arbitration rate. So then you decide how you want to reallocate or how you want to allocate your finances. Do you want it on hitting? Do you want it on pitching? Do you want a combination of both? I could see them using that and just saying, we want to have the best pitching staff in the American League East. And I could just see them going after that and getting both guys. So I don't think they're necessarily, you can only get one ace. I think in the case of Crochet, because he's not huge money, he's just huge player capital, prospect capital. I do think there's a path to getting both guys.
So we've been beating this drum for about a month now because we have not understood this connection whatsoever. There were rumblings toward the end of the year, kind of picked up about last week or so. They've died off a bit. But there have been rumors that there's people in the Sox front office and the higher-ups that really love Willy Adames. And we have kind of discussed that ad nauseum. I'm curious to see if there's any truth to that and how you think he would or wouldn't even fit.
Yeah, no, I've definitely heard that from some people in the organization. I heard both Bregman's name quite a bit and Adames. And I think that, obviously with Bregman, you would think they would have to switch positions for Devers, or you would have to move Bregman to second. But as far as Adames, I think they like the intangibles there. He had it coming off a great year last year. Doesn't make a ton of sense to me just looking at the roster construction. I mean, he's a shortstop, right? Are you going to move him to another position? I mean, you guys tell me, has he played other positions, or is he just a shortstop, or how would that work? Because it seems like shortstop is one spot where, is that where you're going to go, assuming you're going to keep Meyer and you have Trevor Story for another couple years?
So you buy into the whole sign Adames to be the shortstop, and then you kind of were alluding to earlier Marcelo Meyer potentially being in the Crochet trade.
Yeah, I mean, if that's the case, yeah. If you're gonna trade Marcelo, then I think that it makes perfect sense to bring in Adames. And the question is, you have Trevor Story too, and what's gonna happen with him? And do you keep him at shortstop for another year? Maybe have Adames play second. At least give Story one more year to prove he could be the starting shortstop for this team for a full season. It's just, he's 0-for-2 so far. They had him be the second baseman that one year, and that worked out pretty well as far as defensively. So we know Story can play second, but I don't know about you guys, but I'm really surprised how good a shortstop Trevor Story is. I did not watch a lot of Colorado Rockies games, confession. But this guy is awesome at shortstop. He is fun to watch play shortstop. I would love to see him play there for a full season if that could ever happen this year. He's just a natural over there. So really intrigued to see what happens with Story too, depending on how some of these offseason moves play out. Do they try to trade Story and then hope that this doesn't become like the Chris Sale position player thing from last year? All of a sudden, Trevor Story is going off and hitting 35 home runs for Team X,
It's weird with Story, because the way I remember that free agency playing out, I know he had the bum arm, so I'm sure that was a big part of it. But I remember the defense being something that people were worried about. Like, it wasn't even just that it wasn't spectacular. I remember people being worried that he was going to deteriorate defensively. The arm was going to give out. And obviously the arm did give out.
Yeah.
But I mean, this was never something that I saw as possible when he signed over here. It was crazy to see. And yeah, I agree. Wish we could see it for a full season. So
yeah, that off season was so weird with the lockout. He really probably needed that internal bracing procedure that he got the next winter that year. And once he got that, now that's probably bought him another several years of having a great arm at shortstop. It's like he has a rebuilt, elbow now, and the left shoulder that's been fixed up. So you hope that you can finally get the Trevor Story you've been waiting to see. But yeah, he's again just very curious to see what's going to happen, because as you saw with Sale, you know, you finally give up on a guy staying healthy, and it can burn you when it's a high-end talent like that. So I'd like to see if they can finally get their money's worth out of Trevor Story.
Yeah. So next thing I got for you, another potential big money player that I don't think anyone foresaw as a potential big money player throughout the season last year, but it's Nick Pivetta, who got the qualifying offer. I'm curious if you had any inclination that was coming, and because none of us did. And I'm curious if you think there's any chance he accepts it.
I was stunned. I really was. I was just like, because I thought, you know, when I looked at the qualifying offers, I'm like, maybe they give one to O'Neill.
Yeah.
Because he's a 30 homer hitter and somebody's going to sign him. And the worst thing is you get, you know, the draft pick for him when he signs somewhere else. But Nick Pivetta, I never saw Nick Pivetta as a $21 million pitcher. So I think that they've heard enough rumblings from the market that he's of what his going rate is right now, that I think that they're pretty sure he's not going to take it. I would be surprised if he does take it, because I just don't think that they would have offered that to him if he thought he was going to take it. I mean, that's a big salary slot for who he is. And I like Pivetta as a pitcher, and he's a guy who has moments of brilliance out there, but he also is a little inconsistent for my taste. Yeah, I mean, he's a guy who would strike out 8 batters in a row in a game and then lose the same game because he gives up, you know, that kind of that big rally. So he's really sort of you don't always know what you're going to get from Pivetta. So I don't think he's going to take it. I think that his market is must be pretty good. I mean, he's another guy. He's good on the, you know, look at the Baseball Savant. Look at the stack guy. His percentiles are good. His numbers there are very good. So teams that are run by more analytically driven front offices, they see Pivetta as, wow, this is a guy who eats innings every year, who has some dominant stuff. And we could sign him, you know, maybe a 3-year deal. You know, the AAV might not be $21 million. But, you know, say it's 3 at 45, 3 at 50. Is that going to be more appetizing to Pivetta than 1 year at 21 when he has to? He would have to get through this year not knowing if he was going to, you know, what if he had an injury and then maybe his value went down. So,
or even struggles again. Or even struggles again. Because, yeah, if he has the same year on the stat sheet on the Baseball Reference page that he put up this year, how many teams are still going to believe that he can put it together like they seem to right now?
Yeah, so I'd say Pivetta, if he can get a 3-year deal for himself, I think he's going to take that. Even a 2-year deal with the AAV close to the 21, maybe even say it's like 2 for 36, you know, something like that. A similar thing happened with Evaldi a couple years ago, where the Sox made him the qualifying offer. And a lot of people thought he was going to take it because he wasn't coming off a great year in 2022, if you remember.
And was hurt.
Yeah, he had some late season injuries. His fastball was down, and his market ended up being better than I thought it was going to be. And he ended up not taking the qualifying offer. And then it took him a while, but he signed that deal with Texas and won a World Series out of it. So it could be a similar thing. You know, I'll be surprised if come Tuesday at Tuesday at 4 o'clock, you see Nick Pivetta say, okay, I'm going to accept the qualifying offer and come back to Boston on a 1-year deal. If he does, there's probably a very good chance that either he gets traded or somebody else in that rotation gets traded.
So, Ian, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it sounds like you think the Red Sox offered Pivetta the qualifying offer, kind of hoping that he would reject it. Is that correct?
I think they had industry scuttlebutt that he was going to that he was getting a lot of interest in the market. You got to remember they were sort of at the GM meetings at this point, so they had scuttlebutt that he was getting good offers and surprisingly. A decent amount of good offers, and they were like, you know what, he's probably not going to take this. So we'll take a flyer here. We'll take the draft pick, and if for some reason we're stuck with Nick Pivetta, okay, there's worse things in life than being stuck with Nick Pivetta, and you know, we'll trade Cutter Crawford or something like that. So I think it was a calculated gamble, but yeah, I do think that their expectation, I believe, is that he is not going to accept their offer.
Okay, so you kind of just touched on my next question. I want to know if Pivetta does accept the qualifying offer.
Yeah.
Does that mean Cutter Crawford's being moved, someone else being moved, or are they going to run back the same guys that they did in 2024?
Yeah, no, they're not going to run back. No matter what happens, it's kind of like they're not going to run that same group back. I mean, obviously, you have Giolito, who you're adding to this team now, so hopefully that's a good addition. But now, if he takes it, somebody's going, whether it's Pivetta, whether it's Crawford. I don't think they would trade Houck at this point. I don't think they would trade Bayo at this point. I think that contract they got with Bayo was pretty club friendly for the type of pitcher he could become. I still think we haven't seen the best of Brian Bello other than isolated games. I mean, that shutout, I forget who it was against, but that shutout.
The Blue Jays, right?
The Blue Jays, yeah.
Yeah, the one-piece night. I was there. It was wild.
That was an awesome game. I mean, that just came out of nowhere. You're like, where has this been all year? So I think that they think he still has that in him. But yeah, I could definitely see them trading a Crawford or a Pivetta if he takes the offer.
So another name that's kind of been floated, or another two names really, it's been floated with Cutter is maybe a guy who moves. Tristan Casas, which kind of came out of left field for the most part, and then a guy like Willy Abreu.
Yeah,
you might be selling high on almost top five rookie of the year, Gold Glove. What are the odds you think either of those two move, and in what kind of deal could you even envision that moving?
Yeah, it could definitely happen. Let me just say, from a personal standpoint, Abreu might have been my favorite player to watch on last year's team, just because I absolutely loved watching him play right field. I love a good right fielder in Fenway Park, and this guy made every type of play possible out there. So it'd be sad to see him go. But at the same point, you still don't know what kind of hitter he is. You know, he was off to a very – I mean, he was in the rookie of the year conversation for about half the year. I feel like his offense didn't really come back after he fell into the dugout there on just that, you know, clumsy play there.
That was wild.
Yeah, but as far as, what kind of deal would be, it was kind of what I was talking about earlier. Could that be someone that gets them Crochet or a similar pitcher? And I don't think it's that they want to trade Abreu or Acosta so much. It's just that they do need to balance out this lineup. They need to make it more right-handed hitting, and they need to get some more pitching. And there's more than one way to get pitching, whether it's free agency, whether it's trade. So it just might be a vehicle for them to give something, to get something. I think that, you're right that you're kind of selling high on Abreu, but you're selling low on Casas. You would have been selling high on Casas a year ago at this time, but he just did not impress at all when he came back from that injury. So you wonder what that's going to do to his value. I mean, how excited were all of us about Tristan going into last season? I mean, I just thought he was going to have a huge year, and then boom, that stupid rib injury, that crazy rib injury, and he just couldn't get it back. You know, he had that one three-homer game against the Twins, but he didn't have any consistency, and I think it was just all the time he missed. So I'd still be a little leery of trading him because, God, he could become a 40-homer hitter. And when Tristan hits like he's capable of, it doesn't matter that he's a left-handed hitter hitting a Fenway Park, because he can hit over the monster with ease, go to the opposite field. So when he's at his best, he can hit from foul line to foul line. So I would be a little bit leery of trading him unless it's just like a deal that you can't resist.
He's hooked it too. He's done a few like where he hooks it around the pesky pole. So he's just unbelievable hitter.
When he's going right, he's such a good hitter. And it's unfortunate that we just didn't, we didn't see that. I mean, Alex Cora at one point last season said he was a combination of Sean Casey and Mark Teixeira, which I thought was a great kind of comparison. This was shortly after Casas came back from the injury, but it seemed like after that point, after Cora made that comparison, it seemed like he stopped hitting for the rest of the season. But he's a good hitter, man. He's just like, he studies hitting. He's a really interesting guy. And, I'd like to see him continue to develop. But, sometimes, you have to trade something big sometimes, one of your big pieces to get something at times. And that's what makes this offseason truly fascinating to me. It's just there's so many different ways they could go here to kind of bring in the players they need to have that sort of, as they put it, team capable of winning the division.
Yeah, man, I hope it's not Casas. I know it's going to be painful regardless of what you do trade-wise, because either you're trading from a prospect capital that they've been hyping up and we've been hyping up and everyone's been hyping up for years now, or you're trading beloved guys from the big league team that we've seen have success. So it's going to hurt, but with a guy like Casas, I mean, you see him just when he's on the injured list, go stand at home plate and just stare at the field for 20 minutes. And it's like, I feel like no one loves the game and loves the process like he does. And it's just hard to find guys that love the process. Those are the guys you want to extend. You want to keep around for a long time. I hope that's the end result here. But you made a good point. The imbalance of the lineup and, it's a problem. And, we can talk about the guys who could go. And we talked a little bit about Adamas Bregman. But I'm curious, do you think there's interest in bringing Tyler O'Neill back? I know we've heard a little bit of buzz on Teoscar. Or is there a different sort of creative way to bring in a right-handed bat? Because the more I think about it and the more we talk about it, it really doesn't feel like there's a perfect solution here with the right-handed bat.
Yeah, you know, Teoscar's at the top of my wish list as far as a guy I'd like them to see them bring in. I just think – I remember when – you guys remember when he was at the Blue Jays, he would destroy the Red Sox. He loved hitting in Fenway and against the Red Sox. So, to me, he's your number one target. The other one is that, you know, Tyler O'Neill, you talk about that. Yeah, I mean, it would have to be a shorter-term deal. Look, you just can't depend on this guy's health, right? I mean, even this past year where he hit 30 home runs, it felt like he was hurt half the season. So just seems to be a lot of stuff going on with him physically. And with Scott Boras, it's not like he's going to give them any sort of a hometown discount here. So I just really think it comes down to what his market ends up being. And it might be that O'Neill's market – isn't what he thinks it's going to be because of all the injuries he's had in the past. And maybe that is a path for him to come back to Boston, as if, you know, his market kind of isn't what he thinks it's going to be. It isn't what Scott Boras thinks it's going to be. And I think that's the path for O'Neill coming back to Boston under something lower than a 3-year contract, like maybe 2 years with an option or something like that.
All right. I'm going to put you on the spot for this one. Want to know one under the radar free agent that you think might be a fit with the Red Sox?
Yeah, that's a good one. Actually, I have, as far as under the radar in terms of people thinking he's coming to Boston, or under the radar as a player?
Good follow up. I would say under the radar in terms of, like, this is a good player. People aren't linking him to the Red Sox, though.
Yeah, I'm going to say Pete Alonso. You know, if this, yeah, because look, if you do trade Tristan, right, you know, first base open, this guy in Fenway, you know, put that right-handed bat in Fenway. I mean, that's what they're lacking now, is just a right-handed hitter with big pop like that. He should hit 50 home runs if he plays for the Red Sox, right? So I think that would be pretty exciting. So that would be one, just because people aren't thinking, because it's not like the puzzle piece doesn't perfectly fit right now. But it could be a puzzle piece that fits nicely if, say, Tristan Casas gets traded for Garrett Crochet or somebody like that.
Yeah, that might be Gordo's worst nightmare, because that would mean Casas is probably gone and Vlad probably not going to ever play.
Yeah, that's true.
For Gordo's sake, I hope it's not Alonso, but that would be fun. And I agree, he'd hit like 40, 50
it would be fun.
The Red Sox.
It would be fun. Yeah. I hate when my dreams get shot down. Like when Juan Soto got traded to the Yankees and the Red Sox weren't even remotely involved in the trade conversations, I had to axe that dream in my head. And and like they kind of revived it temporarily, but no, it's still dead. I'm not doing CPR on that dream. It's not happening. I can't.
Yeah. All right. It's going to be great, man. I can't wait to see how all this unfolds, and hopefully it happens at a faster pace than some of the previous off seasons. I'm looking forward to those winter meetings in Dallas.
One last question. Total 180. We know how big of a Celtics fan you are.
Oh, yeah. I love these. Yeah.
There might not be a worse day to ask you this question, because as we are recording, they had a monumental collapse against the Atlanta Hawks. Do you think they repeat, and why?
I do think they repeat, because they are the rare repeat team that just has everybody back, not just back, but basically in their primes. And like, we're all forgetting about Porzingis, and that it's almost like, oh, they won the championship without Porzingis last year. And do they even really need him? Yeah, this guy, when he comes back, this is a huge impact player for them. It takes a big load off Al Horford and Keita and Luke Kornet and these guys. And all of a sudden they have the rim protector they need. So, yeah, I think that just Tatum and Brown stay healthy, and you get Kristaps back. You have Derek White playing like he is. Jrue Holiday, the ultimate glue guy. Al Horford, another ultimate glue guy. I think they're just positioned for it. If they're healthy, I mean, it's always about health. But I just think that it's very rare that a championship team comes back with this many guys, like, in their prime. Right? Like in their prime. Tatum and Brown are smacking their prime. Kristaps still in his prime. Derek White just really coming into his prime. Jrue maybe a little past his prime, but he's still probably the best all on ball defender in the NBA. And Peyton Pritchard, man.
Yeah.
Peyton Pritchard. Who doesn't love Peyton Pritchard? This guy is scoring 17, 18 points a game off the bench. So they've got a lot of weapons. So I do like their chances to repeat. And to me, as a Celtics follower, The one thing I've been following them since, you know, the early 80s, and the one thing I've never seen them do is repeat. So that's kind of on my sports bucket list is to see the Celtics repeat. The whole 2009 thing still kills me with KG, you know, they were going to repeat that year if he didn't ruin his knee. And the other one was that you guys way too young to remember this, but 1985, they had the best record during the regular season. They were well positioned to repeat, but Cedric Maxwell hurt his knee. Kevin McHale moved into the starting lineup, but they didn't have that depth. They had no bench with Maxwell playing hampered. So they could have won it that year too. So just would love to see them repeat it at one point. I think that this year they could be in really a good position to do that.
That is such a first world bucket list item. Like, I have friends, and I'm 27. I have friends, and they're New York sports fans, and they're like fans of the teams that, like, they've never seen any of their teams win any championship once. Yeah. Not none of them.
Oh my God. My best friend's a Knicks fan, and he's like, he hasn't seen them. He was born the same year they won their last championship, I think. So yeah.
Don't they only have one or two, the Knicks?
They won in 70 and 73, right?
How is that possible, man? Like, you're New York City. It's like the fun of basketball, and they've only won two?
Because John Starks went like 3 for 22 in a game 7 of the 94 finals. It's crazy to me.
I mean, you'd think like free agents are dying to play in New York, but I mean, like.
Yeah. Something with the Knicks. It's kind of like, you know, something with the Jets. You know, so something in certain New York teams. It just never seems to work out.
Hey, no, man, Sammy, they could have had that KD Kyrie thing fail in that part of New York. It wouldn't have worked there either. But I'll tell you, I say this as often as I can, but I absolutely freaking cherish this era of Celtics basketball. I don't know how long we're gonna have it for, but it is perfect. There is just not a single worry. Because even with like Porzingis being out, he's going to be back in January, December, maybe. And it's like, okay, like, we'll see what happens when we get to the postseason. Enjoy the show, because it's the best show in the NBA right now. And we'll get to the playoffs, and we can stress then, because obviously it's postseason basketball. But it's a blast. It's so great.
Absolutely. You got to enjoy it. I was just thinking about that, you know, the other day, or might have even been today. It's just enjoy this team while you have this nucleus. And I felt the same way during the Bird era. Obviously, I felt the same way about the Pats. Like, you know, how lucky are we to watch this every Sunday for almost 20 years? Like, you don't always get this. And now you see it with the Patriots now, and you saw it with the Red Sox the last few years. Like, it just doesn't always go like that. So you do have to just kind of soak it and enjoy, like, the good old days, as they say, because that's what these are the good old days right now for the Celtics again.
We just got another banger quote from Joe Mazzulla like 3 minutes ago. I'm not sure if you guys saw, there was a Jeopardy question yesterday before asking about what movie does Joe Mazzulla watch before Celtics games? The answer is The Town. And a reporter just asked him about it, literally as we're recording, and he goes, "I couldn't care less."
He's so
what
good.
A gem, man.
Yeah, he is beautiful, man. It took a while for him to grow on me, but, you know, once he started calling timeouts and coming out with some of these great quotes, you know, he's really just confident in the way he speaks to the media now. It's kind of fun to watch the post-game press conference.
I couldn't care
less. He must be a blast to cover. Like, to be a part of those press conferences every single game.
Yeah, that he'll challenge guys. Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah, it could be scary if you're, like, young or new. It could be scary. He'll go after you. we want to thank you, Ian Brown, for joining us on Playtesty, making your Playtesty debut. Probably overdue, but that's our fault. We should have had you on a long time ago. But thank you so much for hopping on. And, you know, till next time, we'll see you. I don't know if there's some sort of other iteation of Winter Weekend. If not, we'll see it spring training or something.
Yeah, but we'll catch up soon. The big, Corbin Burns press conference.
That's the real answer.
Yeah, so hope to see you in Fenway this winter at a big press conference. Bigger than the Yoshida one a couple years ago that we thought was a really big press conference and turned out to be not such a big press conference.
Or the Kenley Jansen one for a two-year deal. That was interesting to me. Okay, how about that? We will see you at the Corbin Burns press conference.
All right, love it. Love it, guys.
All right, appreciate it, Ian. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me on. See you guys.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on.
The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.